On today's episode of The Good Word, Gary Washburn joins me to discuss Game 6 of the NBA Finals, some undertold stories there, and we preview Game 7. What is this going to be like for Seattle, for Oklahoma City, for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and for Tyrese Halliburton? We talk about Ime Udoka's extension, the Lakers ownership group changing hands, and the future of the Milwaukee Bucks. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. It is the postmortem of Game 6 of the NBA Finals. I am in Oklahoma City. My man Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe is at his crib where he don't have to see Indy or Oklahoma City. I consider that man lucky. G, thanks for joining me, man.
Oh, anytime, anytime. It's been a fun series and definitely enjoyed your coverage and want to get your reaction to a certain tweet about comparing TJ McConnell and Isaiah Thomas. I want to get your thoughts on that. I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we will talk about that. I will yell at somebody later. People are getting a little too crazy with this. Although I like TJ McConnell, we're getting a little too wild, Gary. We're getting a little too wild. All right, Gary, Game 6, I literally, and this is no shade to the Indiana Pacers, and I guess I should stop doing this. I had my flight booked home. I'm like, after game four, I was like, oh, the series is over. They have blown this series. You blew game four at home. You lose game five on the road. J-Dub scores 40. You know what's going to happen in game six. Tyrese Halliburton's hurt. They're being real coy about what he's looking like. He didn't look good in game five. Gary, they are wasting our time because, Gary, it looks like they could have long ago have won this series.
Oklahoma City?
No.
Or Indiana?
Yeah.
Wow. They should have. Game four reminded me of Boston Golden State game four, and you were there because you love, I don't know how much you love Boston, and they were up 5 points, 5 minutes left, and Steph happened, and then they never won another game of the series. So I thought that's what's going to happen here. They blew game four. They didn't score. I think they scored one point in the last 3:20, and then game five, they just looked. They again played from behind and then turned the ball over. So I thought the series was going to be over. I thought Oklahoma was going to just say, okay, we're the better team. But I just think this Indiana team is a team of destiny, man. They're something special. And as much as I just think all the pressure is on the Thunder, all the pressure, because they've been in Oklahoma for 17 years. They've prepared 17 years for this moment. You're talking about the drafting of KD and Russ and Harden, drafting Ibaka, making the finals in 12, like all the ups and downs this franchise has been through, it is to get here. And all the sacrifice they've made to basically tank for a couple of seasons and be the placeholder for a lot of bad contracts, the Kemba Walker, the Al Horford, the Chris Paul, and all that, and take all those picks. This is it. And if you blow it, there is no guarantee you're coming back next year because there's going to be three or four more teams next year who will be ramping up. Like, you got to look at everybody thought the Celtics. I remember you hit me up when they blew out the Knicks in the opener. It's like, we're going to be back in Boston. And everybody thought that, then it didn't happen. So to me, this is a series that's all the pressures on the Thunder. The Pacers, if you lose game seven, it's painful. It sucks. You're always going to remember it. But It's more of a loss for the Thunder than I think it is for the Pacers. But the Pacers, I've been trying to tell people about the Pacers. Like, they are a fun team to watch, and they messed around for the first 2 months of the season. But this is a serious ass team.
Gary, you said it. For one, starting off 10-15. And you know, like I know, when you start the season and you're paying attention to a little bit of everybody. Once a team goes to the conference finals and then they trick off the first 25 games, you stop paying attention to them. you don't have but that much attention, that much bandwidth. You start paying attention to, okay, Oklahoma City, okay, Cleveland, okay, Boston, getting back at it. Like, you don't really think about it. Then you think about the New Yorks and the Detroits, like some of the teams coming up out of nowhere. Even when they improved, you weren't giving them the attention that they deserved. Then you look at Tyrese Halliburton. Gary, we don't have to have this superstar franchise player discussion. I think that's ridiculous, right? Face of the league, all sort of type of stuff. But the fact, Gary, that he went out there, just his mere presence, I think, sort of lifted the crowd. It lifted his teammates. It lifted the entire, like, atmosphere and space where the second he hit that first shot, like, Gary, when you weren't there, I don't know if it conveyed on the sound, but when he missed his first few shots, the crowd was, ooh. And they felt like it was a heavy moment. When he hit his first shot, because remember, the game was a blowout, but it wasn't a blowout early. It was very, very contained early. And when he hit his first shot, when he got on that switch with Hartenstein and he hit it, everybody was like, okay, he's here. He's back. He only had 14 and 5 assists, but it felt like he had 30. And that's, I think, the effect that he has, where the numbers don't look like it. But when you watch him play, you see how valuable he is. And that's something that you can't, you know, you can't quantify. You can't account for when you go into a game 7.
Yeah, I think with a game 7, anything is going to go. And, you know, I don't know, like we were there for 2016 in Oracle. I covered a game 7 in 2010 in Staples. Like, it's all together. The old atmosphere is different. Like, I remember in Staples for Celtics-Lakers, like, during the timeouts, you know, usually people just going to get drinks, hanging out. There's more of a festive atmosphere at an NBA game. There was a silence during timeouts when the Laker girls were performing. It was just like, and somebody was trying to shoot a shot for $20,000. Like, there was this tense atmosphere, the intensity in the crowd of, like, we could blow this, especially when, obviously, the home crowd. So I'm not sure how Paycom is going to be on Sunday night, but I don't think it's going to be like any of the first three games, because this is the biggest sports moment. Now, you can include all the Oklahoma Sooner national championship games and all that, right? But this is the biggest professional sports moment in the state of Oklahoma. Like, this isn't even close. There's nothing even close to this, right? So this is it. And so there's going to be an intensity. And the question is, do the Thunder feed off that and say, hey, give you peace of mind? Like, you know, we've seen game sevens where one of the teams, usually the road team, just kind of throws in, like, they've shown it, they've had enough. Like, you know, the earlier this in the playoffs, the Clippers at Denver, where they had nothing left, right? And like, by second quarter, they were spent. I don't think Indiana's gonna do that. I mean, Indiana's going to push this to where it's going to come out to some tense moments to where the Thunder are going to have to make some plays. Like, I just don't think they're going to lay down. I don't think they're going to do what Denver did and lay down in game 7 because they're just tired. Indiana ain't tired. Like, Halliburton's banged up, but that's a young, deep team. So this will be, to me, a fascinating situation because you've never seen it. Like, in 2010... Rasheed fouled out. Rasheed was exhausted. Like, all the, you know, 15th year in the league, you know, all the teams, everything that had happened in Rasheed's career manifested in that game 7. And he fouled out and was just, I mean, he needed an oxygen tank damn near. Like, he was done. That big three was done. But these ain't old guy. Ain't no 30-year-old on this team besides McConnell. So, who's going to run out of, nobody's going to run out of energy. It's going to be a matter of execution. And if you look at game 6, Indiana, Rick Carlisle, I mean, I think we overlook him, you know, because he's won one championship. He's bounced around a lot, but that dude's a brilliant coach.
Gary, he's an excellent coach. You start putting him in the top 10 category if things go how some people expect it to go.
If they
night.
Win, and he goes to the Hall of Fame, right?
Yes.
Two championships with two teams. Like, if he wins this and other successful runs with the Pistons and all that, and earlier with the Pacers, like, his legacy is cemented with a win on Sunday.
Yeah, no, you ain't lying. Look, it's so many things you touched on. For one, I think people need to know, A, game sevens in the NBA Finals are rare. I can think of, I want to say, five in my lifetime since we started. Okay, 84, I wasn't born yet, but 84 Lakers-Celtics.
Yeah.
88 Pistons-Lakers. That's a three-point game. 94 Knicks-Rockets. That was a very close game in the fourth quarter. What am I forgetting? 05 Pistons-Spurs.
Pistons-Spurs.
A slugfest.
Yes.
That's a freaking slugfest in a game seven. If they crossed 80 points, I don't think anybody crossed 80 points. I don't want to say the Pistons even had a six-point lead in the second half, which was like 12 back then with how bad the offenses were. And then, like you said, you had the Lakers and Celtics, Heat and Spurs in 13, and that was the LeBron, might have been the best version of LeBron we've ever seen. Tim Duncan missed that layup. He slapped the floor. Like, he knew. Like, the margins are very thin. And then, of course, like you just said, Warriors, Cavs in 2016. None of those games were pretty.
No.
Like, when you talk about game sevens in the NBA Finals, I always tell people, especially in the 2-3-2, game sixes are much more aesthetically pleasing than game sevens. Game sevens, both teams are worn out. Whether you're young or you're old, you are just emotionally wrung out. You have nothing more to give. Like, we're tired from traveling in this series, and even the extra days in between, you're still tired. Gary, who's equipped to play an ugly game? Is that the Pacers being more equipped to play an ugly game? Or is that the Thunder because they can turn you over? They're at home. You've got a supreme shot maker in Shea. Does that bode better for OKC if this is going to follow the script of the last seven game sevens in the finals?
Yeah, I think the Thunder have the advantage simply because they have guys who can, like, first of all, they're at home, so their role players are going to play better. So the Aaron Wiggins's, the Cason Wallace's, the Alex Caruso's, they have a better chance of stepping up and having one of those, like, legacy kind of games, right, where a guy just comes out of nowhere and has 18 points or something like that. Like, I think they have a better shot because they're playing in front of the home fans. It is Benedict Mathurin capable of that, or Obi Toppin,
who's been playing really well?
Yeah, I need to see more from Andrew Nembhard. Like, that's a dude who's a dog who just hasn't had a very good offensive series. He's not shot a lot. He's not scored a lot. I think he's capable of one of those games. Obviously, McConnell can come off. He's become a wild card, the X factor in this series, who's helped them extend this series to seven. But I want to see, and I need to see some out of Miles Turner. But Nembhard's a guy that I think could be special. But I think with being at home, you know, the Isaiah Joes, and if he plays, I don't think he played game six, Cason Wallace, those guys can have a more potential for, like, one of those games where they hit four or five threes, you know. But like you said, Vinny, you're right. I mean, that game seven, 2010, the final score was 83-79. And Kobe was 6-for-24.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Kobe was not a good Kobe. He was a enduring Kobe. Like, he kept trying, and he got to the free throw line. He made plays. Like, he never gave up. He was resilient in that game, but he wasn't good. Nobody was good.
Powell was good, I thought. I thought Gasol was good.
Gasol
in that game.
And you know, Artest hit a couple of shots, and Derek Fisher hit a couple of shots, but. Like, that was not a great Kobe game. It was for his legacy because they won.
Right.
Right. And he got revenge on the Celtics, and they went back to back. But to me, you're right. I mean, this could be 90-86. This could be an old school 1990s game. It's not going to be pretty. And if it is pretty, it's one team scoring 120 and the other team scoring 95 because, like you said, they just run out of gas.
It's going to be fascinating. Like, the one thing that's going to utterly get on my nerves, Gary, is if the Indiana Pacers make us go through all of this and then they don't show up for a game seven, which I actually don't think is going to happen. I don't think they don't buckle. They don't scare. Whenever you think they're up against the ropes and they're getting ready to get knocked out, they play the rope-a-dope. Like, I give them all the credit. And I'm going to give you this stat because you brought up Andrew Nembhard, and then we can get to the T.J. McConnell portion of the program. Because I know people want to hear the T.J. McConnell portion of the program. Andrew Nembhard, I'm going to give him credit on this one because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 8 turnovers last night. In this series, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 27 assists, 21 turnovers. That is not a recipe for success. And he's a normal 3-to-1 guy. They are going after him. Whenever he turns his back to drive, someone's coming from the weak side to strip him and dive for the ball. Like, there is an element, Gary, of, and the Pacers don't like it when I ask the question. But, Gary, I said to them, I asked Pascal Siakam this yesterday, who played extremely well and had that monster dunk. I asked Pascal, I said, you guys came into this series really confident, but I feel like you guys are more confident as this series has gone on. He's like, no, we've always been confident. And I guess he hears it as, we didn't think that we could beat this team and now we can. I just think you guys have gotten so comfortable in it, there's no mystique about a 68-win team. You're like, man, these dudes are just dudes. And they're young dudes. We can get one off of them. So yeah, we're more confident. They just don't hear it that way, but that's the way that they're playing, totally. Gary. And they just look like they're more confident.
Totally. It's like the first few games were just two teams that had no familiarity with each other, filling each other out. Now, this is Ali Frazier, right? This is, the great trilogies of boxing where this is Hearns Leonard. This is like two guys who have know every move. And it's just like, who's the toughest? Who is going to win is going to be the team that just has the more resiliency. There's no more scouting reports. There's no more wrinkles you can throw in. You might be able to throw in one or two wrinkles here and there because I'm sure Dagenau's going to make some adjustments for game 7. But this is just like, who wants it more? Who's got the better execution? Who knocks down shots? Who gets rebounds? Is Shai how comfortable he is in the early going? Do you play Shai? Does Shai say, listen, I don't want to come out the game. I'm playing all 48. I'm playing this game until it's decided. Or do you do the regular rotations? What happens there? Like, I think that's where it comes down to the playing time. What do you do in terms of a 7th game? Now, like, I think it was a very observation. I think Richard Jefferson had, like, there's been more scraps in the last couple of games. These two teams have gone from, I don't really know you. Hey,
being too polite.
Yeah, like,
they're very polite.
Like, hey, we're from the East. You're from the West. Good to see you. We haven't seen each other in a while. To now, there's a rivalry. And now they don't like each other. Now they're tired of each other. So to me, the game 7 comes down to like just the want to, the desire, the hustle plays, and who like Artest or Kyrie knocks down that shot that like he's gonna take this. Oh, it's in. Like, who is gonna be that guy?
Gary, this is what it feels like. And I promise you I'm not gonna get in trouble when I say this. When you at like the end of a relationship with somebody and you just real this close from like walking out on their ass, the second you like smell their perfume, it just turns you. It used to smell real good, and now it just smells like, man, I can't wait to get this. I can't wait to get her up out of here. That's what they're like with each other. Like, as soon as you step on the floor, man, I know what deodorant this clown uses. That type of thing. Like, it's that general contentiousness, and it makes for, if nothing else, compelling theater and basketball. And now to T.J. McConnell. It's going to be real short, Dakota, so you ain't got to cut this up. Our friend Jared Weiss from The Athletic, he made some crazy comment. Maybe I'll dig it up for Dakota and put it so it can be on the screen so everybody can see the absurdity. T.J. McConnell was having a game in game 5 in OKC. He was bringing them back, and Jared Weiss says something dumb like, man, he's like 75% of Isaiah Thomas. And he didn't mean like 75% of like little Isaiah Thomas. He meant 75% of like Zeke. And I asked that man if he was on crack. Like, why can't we just admire T.J. McConnell for all the stuff that he's doing without, like, going overboard? Like, I think he'd be the perfect Celtic, even more perfect than Peyton Pritchard. Like, he is a real dog, scrappy dude. He gets to the lane when nobody gets there. And for whatever reason, he seems to get his jump shot over all of these dudes when it seems like very obvious that they should be sending it back to the fifth row. That being said, y'all, no. No. No.
Oh, I think he's a great player. I think Jared said, like, he could have played 40 years ago. Like, how good would he have been 40 years ago? And there was, you know, like, he was he's 75% of Isaiah Thomas, as good as Isaiah Thomas.
You know who's 75% of Isaiah Thomas? You know who's 75% of Isaiah Thomas? Chris Paul. That's who's 75% of Isaiah Thomas. Not T.J. McConnell. God bless him. His daddy came on to the NBA TV set last night.
He hugged Isaiah. He couldn't wait to see. He loves Isaiah. He hugged him.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. That was a great moment. And it's funny, Gary, I don't know if you can hear this. When he comes in the game, he gets the absolute biggest cheer from the crowd. He doesn't even have to do anything. He gets the biggest cheer from the crowd. He's this spark plug. He's still in outlet passes. He's still in entry passes. Like, he does something to that atmosphere there. And normally, you come off the bench as a point guard, your job is to not mess stuff up, right? He comes in there, and he's changing the pace and the complexion of the game. And Gary, I give him all the credit in the world because he was doing things in game five that Tyrese Halliburton couldn't do because his body wouldn't let him.
Mm-hmm.
So I give him all the credit in the world. And maybe he's a spark plug. Maybe Obi Toppin, who scored 20 and all of a sudden looks like a sniper from three in this series. Like, maybe he steps up. Like, their possibilities for this are endless. Now we get to the MVP, Gary. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the MVP. I've had no problem voting for him. If the series ended today and Oklahoma City wins the series, he's probably the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You're right.
This is not a legacy game. I hate the word legacy because you don't know what your legacy is until you're done. This is a reputation game for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. If you're going to be the scoring champion, if you're going to win MVP, the best player on a 68-win team, that says you should be the guy carrying your team over the top. Strength in numbers and all that stuff is cool. Lining up with your teammates after the game and doing the group interviews, all that is cool. But Gary, this is on Shai.
Mm-hmm.
At the crib. He's got to be the one to set the tone, especially after this piss poor game that he had in game six, where he looked out of it and his team looked out of it. Gary, he's got to be the one to show up to carry these guys there, especially if it's going to be a close and ugly game.
Yeah, I mean, he is the leader. And I know he's only 26, but he is the franchise cornerstone. He is the guy. And he has got to have, like you said, he's got to, like, Jason Tatum last year, damn near had a triple-double in a closeout game against Dallas. Like, this is where legacies and reputations are born. And, you know, Shai has had a solid series, 30 and a half, almost five rebounds, almost four assists, two steals, a block and a half. I'm looking, and like you said, 23 turnovers in the six games. So not great assist to turnover ratio, 27-23, but there's just got to be that game. There's just got to be that give me the damn ball. I'm leading, you know, jump on my back. You know, there's like
says he did that. He did that in game four. He's got to do it again.
He's got to do it again. I mean, this is what's like, they've let this series get this far, right? They messed off game one. They won game two. They kind of slacked in game three. So this is on them. As I said, but like this franchise, like, this is, they've been building this for years. Like, this is what Presti did. This is why he traded Ray Allen. This is why he drafted Durant. This is all, you know, this is why he traded Rashard Lewis to Orlando. Like, all the stuff that is done in Seattle to set, this was, it's here. It's 18, 19 years later, right? Because this is what they wanted. They wanted him to prepare, and he prepared a championship team in 2011 and 12, and it blew up. We can, you know, there's going to be a 30 for 30 on why that Thunder team never won a title and what happened between Russ and KD and, you know, and then trading Harden, keeping Ibaka, and all that's going to be a 30 for 30. But this is their second chance. Pressey has made all the right moves. He made that heist to get Gildas Alexander. He drafted Jalen Williams 12. And you know, 12 is a hard, that's hard to find an all-star at 12 in these kind of these days, right? That's just, you gotta strike gold. He struck gold. He got Holmgren. He signed Caruso and Hardenstein. Like Aaron Wiggins, a second round pick. Isaiah Joey plucks him out of Philadelphia. Like all of this. Cason Wallace, mid first round pick. Like dudes, everybody's got a role. This, they've done everything right. And so if they blow this, like, you know, to
they can't.
To the
four, they can't
to
blow
the
this.
Force, if you blow it to the Celtics, okay. You blow it to the 64 win Cavs, okay. You blow it to the 50 win 4 seed Pacers. Ooh. And that's nothing against the Pacers, but
right.
But you're playing the 4 seed out of the East. Like, you were supposed to win this series in 5 or 6. Now you've got a home game. I don't know if that's an advantage. Like, OKC's a hard place to play. The fans are going to be into it, but that place is going to be tense.
Tight.
Very
it's gonna be tight.
Tight.
It's going to be tight. 18 years of this buildup. And for those who don't know, Gary covered the Seattle Supersonics when they were in Seattle before they left. Like, he knows how this, the whole thing, that's why I want him on today, because he knows from the inception of the Sam Presti era how this is built. And I know everybody in Seattle has negative feelings, and I completely understand that. We don't even have to go there. It's just, it's done. Like, I don't count Seattle's championship as their championship.
No, you can't.
OKC is going for their first. With that being said, everybody is carrying not franchise wounds, but generational traumas into Game 7. The Indiana Pacers are carrying losing to the Bulls in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. That trauma. They're carrying losing to the Orlando Magic in 1995 as franchise trauma. They're carrying losing to the Knicks in 94 and in 99. They're carrying all of those traumas and losing to the Pistons and, you know, when you've never gotten there and you've won in the ABA, and those guys are honored and we respect those guys as such, the NBA guys, the guys who have been there since the Pacers have been, you know, part of the NBA since the merger, they have been a very good franchise, an almost underrated franchise. But all that franchise trauma carries into Game 7.
Yeah,
you don't want another failure, Gary Washburn. You don't want to add Tyrese Halliburton to Reggie Miller and all those guys with the Pacers who could not get it done. But somebody's going to lose this game on Sunday night. Somebody's going to go home disappointed. And I don't know who that's going to be. And I think that's the beauty of it all.
That is. I mean, you're talking about a franchise that's still marred by the malice at the palace, right? Because everybody's talking about how good, that doesn't happen, that night doesn't happen in Detroit in 2006, like how good Indiana, was that 2004, five?
It was 2004, November 04.
My fault. 2004, how the Pacers were going to, instead of the Pistons, how the Pacers would have got to the finals. Like how that barred their franchise for the next half.
People stopped showing up.
Yeah, Reggie retired. Reggie was like, I'm done. Like that changed their whole franchise. How they got, you know, they drafted Jonathan Bender and he was supposed to be a generational piece and he had bad knees. Like all of what's happened in Indiana, the Paul George, and now they picked Paul George out of Fresno State. He ends up being a guy that people hadn't heard of, ends up being a superstar. Then he asks out. What happened, you know, the Oladipo, you know, like all of
Sabonis.
Sabonis, yes. Like, you know, all of what they've tried. They have tried. And Indiana has not had lack of effort. Indiana has not been Charlotte. Indiana's not been these teams that just are okay with winning 32 games. Like, they've really tried. And this rehiring Carlisle and then just, like, the Halliburton trade, getting Aaron Nesmith from the Celtics.
Trading Siakam. Yep, when people thought, why were you trading for Pascal Siakam?
Siakam's okay, but he, like, you know, And giving Toronto another mid-market team, taking advantage of their rebuild, you know, plucking Obi Toppin from the Knicks. All of those guys. So those guys all got chips on their shoulders. Nimhart's a second round pick. You know, you literally have Tony Bradley out there playing NBA quality finals minutes. Tony Bradley, who's in the G League and who's been like 8-19 since he got out of North Carolina. Like, that dude's playing productive minutes. You got Thomas Bryant out there. Like, you know, so to me, this is a legacy for each franchise. 17 years in the making for Oklahoma and 40 years for Indiana. People are like ripping Reggie Miller for cheering. I'm like, the dude played 20 years in Indiana.
That's amazing. Like, that's anybody, and I mean anybody, if you're comparing your fandom for whatever team to Reggie Miller, who put 20 years of sweat equity in there.
He's a black man who moved to Indiana in 1985. Like, you know, who had
his house burnt down.
Yeah, like, come on.
By people.
Who wanted Steve Alford. Like, they literally didn't like him because they wanted the hometown kid. And Steve Alford played like 3 years in the league. Like, you know what I'm saying?
They wanted more than the hometown kid, yeah, Gary. Yeah,
something like that. So, yeah.
They wanted more than the hometown. They wanted something a little different, Gary.
Yes, they wanted, but Reggie had to, you know, immerse himself into like the India, and now he's a hero, and people are like ripping him for I'd rip him if he wore his own jersey. He's not wearing his own jersey. Like, if he wore 31 out there and was like, he had Jalen Rose on the other day. I think he had Dale Davis in the previous game.
Mark Jackson.
Yeah. So, no, he's giving homage to the greats that are not him. Like, you know, and there's, believe me, Vinny, we know dudes that would wear their own jersey courtside cheering. Yeah. Like, they'd be like, you know, put me in a game. But,
right.
But you cannot criticize Reggie Miller for playing 20 years in Indiana, not going anywhere, not even coming out of retirement and signing with the Celtics because they were after him. Like, and so you're right, Vinny, a legacy game, because people don't remember, you know, Indiana was a very successful ABA franchise with Roger Brown and George McGinnis and Mel Daniels and those guys. And they have tried and struggled since. And we can go through the great players that come out of it,
they've had them. So with that, game seven, Sunday night, 19 days of this long ass series, because it's 2-2-1-1-1 instead of 2-3-2. Bring back the 2-3-2.
Vinny,
Gary, what's your prediction? What's going to happen Sunday night at midnight Eastern time? Who's going to hold up the Larry O'Brien trophy?
I'm going to take the Pacers. I'm going to say the Pacers.
Let's go, Gary Washburn, off the top rope.
You know me, my predictions and my voting's always against the grain. So, you know, we talk about that some other time. But to me, I just think the Pacers, there's something there's teams of destiny. There's just teams like my 88 Dodgers. Just there's teams of destiny. Your 04 Pistons, like. That team.
I was in college by then.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, Vinny, like, that was your team. Don't act like you weren't there cheering for the Pistons. Don't do that. I know you gave up the Lions. You divorced the Lions. We got the paperwork. We can call the city of Detroit and I can print out the paperwork for you. Divorce papers from the Lions. I can print them out and I can put a PDF for our viewers to watch to see the official divorce papers. And Vinny got no support, but he just walked. He pulled a Tina Turner. He just walked away with his name. You know,
she can go, but name stays home. Name stays here. Go watch the movie. Go watch the movie. But no, Gary, the thing that gets me is that the teams who have won game six to force it to game seven the last three times, they've won the series. 2010, Lakers forced a game seven. 2013, Heat forced a game seven. 2016, Cavaliers forced a game seven. That's a 3-1 thing. I hate to say this because if I agree with you, people are going to be like, oh my God. Blah, blah, blah. Look, hey, I predicted Oklahoma City in 5 games. I did. I was wrong. I thought it was going to be Oklahoma City in 6 games. Clearly, I was wrong. I tend to believe I don't know how healthy Tyrese Halliburton is. And I'm with you on the Team of Destiny thing. I think Jalen Williams has a game.
Yeah.
I think Jalen Williams has a game that you cannot necessarily account for. I don't think you can account for Chet Holmgren. I don't know if you can account for even Shea, because, you know, who knows how the officials are going to officiate the contact in the game seven. We all know it's going to be an ugly game. But Jalen Williams is the guy that nobody really has a matchup for. And he had an ugly, ugly game six. He went from scoring 40 to a minus 40.
Minus 40.
I'm not saying he's going
to
win MVP.
That's really hard to do, man.
That's really hard to do, right? And it was right when everybody said, everybody evoked Scottie Pippen. And I'm like,
oh
yeah,
God.
I gave him the kiss of death.
Somebody even called Scottie and got his thoughts on Jalen Williams.
And of course, Scottie, because ain't nobody thinking about Scottie. Scottie like, yeah, of course I see a little bit of myself in him. That'd be like me seeing myself in, like, you know, Hollywood heartthrob. Yeah, of course I see myself in this A-list dude, because somebody thinking about me. Now, man, get out of here. Be that as it may, I'm calling it now. J-Dub scores 30. I don't know if he steals finals MVP because he's had some stinkers. But here's going to be the score. 110-105. Thunder win their first title, and it does not come easy, and it does not come pretty. But I think that's the prediction, Gary.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I
could be wrong.
We all both
could
be
wrong. I will have egg on my face if the Indiana Pacers are holding this up. And the only reason I gave a prediction was because I was asked to give a prediction, and I don't even like giving them. But oh well, so be it. When we come back, we're gonna talk about Gary's, you know, hometown team or hometown space. The Lakers getting a new owner and what that means for everybody there. Welcome back to The Good Word, here with Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. G, you are a L.A. Inglewood native. The Lakers have been the mom-and-pop franchise of mom-and-pop franchises for the past 50 years, right? Or at least close to it,
yeah.
Since Jerry Buss took it over. They are no longer mom-and-pop. Mark Walter and the Guggenheim Group and everybody that owns the Dodgers, $10 billion. Hand it over. That's who has it. Gary, I think an undertold discussion about this, undertold element about this, is that Irvin Magic Johnson can walk in the building again. Not that he couldn't walk in the building again, but he can strut in the building. And remember the last time we really saw Magic in an official capacity with the Lakers? It had that, I'm not going to be here. That, he said, I'll be back. And you knew Magic was going to find a way to get back in the building. I am fascinated by what that means for Magic and LeBron, Magic and Luka, Magic and the Lakers, Magic and Rob Pelinka.
Yeah.
I'm really fascinated by what this means for everybody going forward. Yeah, I'm leaning into the mess because I don't know nothing about, I can't get into that financial world. I don't know the difference between $10 billion and $9 billion. Mm-hmm. I can just tell y'all I am fascinated by the people part of this business, Gary.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that this kind of came out of nowhere. I think we have heard about the uncertainty of the Buss family, and since Dr. Buss passed away, and just the whole, you know, the Lakers, all the documentaries and all of what's happened, you know, and Jeannie, and kind of like, okay, is she the right person? And it's great that she's a governor, but how is this going down? And then Pelinka, and so who's gonna, like, is Magic and, you know, you do a much better Magic imitation than I do. Him walking back into the building as...
Guess who's back?
As president of new president of basketball operations. Just let me handle this. Now that the Commanders are on, you know, got the new stadium deal and they got Jaden Daniels. So, like, the Commanders going to be all right. They're going to be all right. You know, the Dodgers just came off a World Series, so let me, what can old number 32 do? Let me get back into the Lakers and prepare for life after LeBron. But, I mean, who knows how, like, there's got to be a level of impatience, like, right? Like, they've done all these moves since the bubble, and I don't like when the bubble is discounted. I won no real championship. Like, the sacrifices they made in being there, for 3 months myself. Like, that was some sacrifice. So as much as it was no home and road, I think that's the one thing that probably swayed the results was, you know, Denver coming back from 3-1 against the Clippers. In real life, they would have to win, I think, 2 games in LA to do that. And obviously they won two, they won all 3 games in a neutral floor. So you could say that, but the Lakers were the best team in the bubble and some dudes wanted out. So you can count that, but I still think it's a chip. But since then, like, it's been a disaster. And first round eliminations and the Darvin Ham stuff that just didn't work out. And JJ was supposed to be this genius, so they lost in 5 to, like, they didn't even compete with Minnesota, Vinny. Like, they competed, but, like, it's like they just got, they got gentlemen
swept. They got stomped out.
And it wasn't Denver. But, well, they just don't match up well with Denver. But Minnesota, and they were the higher seed. It was a 3-6 matchup. So, to me, you know, I think everybody's got to be looking over their shoulder, you know, especially Rob Pelinka, you know, and who knows how this whole LeBron-Bronny thing translated in terms of the organization, whether just sacrifice the publicity and doing all that and occupying a roster spot for it and giving them a guaranteed contract and as much as they needed a freaking big man. But we can't, well, I know one person ain't getting released. It ain't going to be Bronny. We can't, you know, we can't sign anybody off the street because he's got to have a secure roster. Like, who knows how that has translated because it did not result in even a playoff round win. Like, they didn't get a chance to meet Oklahoma. They lost to the Thunder, okay. They lost again in the second round to the Nuggets. Like, you could maybe excuse it. Maybe they lost in an epic series to the Warriors. They literally didn't get out of the first round. So I think changes, Vinny, are in store. One, you got to prepare for life after LeBron, which means mm-hmm. you're going to have to draft well. You're going to have to figure out what to do with Austin Reeves. You're going to have to get a capable big man. Like, we'll see what happens. And, you know, and I just think you can't – I just think maybe it was time for the bus situation to end because it was not ending well. Like, one championship since 2010 – you know, the end of the Kobe era didn't go well. And then how many lottery picks they have? Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Lonzo Ball, all gone. None of them.
Brandon Ingram.
Brandon Ingram. Four of those new, four top, what, 6 picks? Like, I think Randle was 6. Like, you know, all those other guys were 2s. Like, and you still don't have anything to show for it. None of those guys made an all-star team with the Lakers. Like, that's botching, man. Because it's not like you built a team and you won so much that you had like, you know, you're only 20 and 30 picks in the 20s and 30s. You had literally 3 number 2 overall picks. You picked Lonzo Ball for Jason Tatum. And Tatum, who said he wanted to be a Laker.
Yeah.
He said
that
like 3 months ago when we went to L.A., and Magic had to explode. We sorry, man. Like, you know, we didn't ask you to work out again. Like, Tatum was felt some kind of way. Like, damn, Magic, you know, we got to draft Lonzo Ball. He's a local kid. Well, so that's Irvin's decisions. But to me, something's got to give in LA because this ain't working. And are they the favorites to go next year? Are they going to come out the West next year?
No. I mean, we got to see what
they do, but like, you know, 41-year-old LeBron, Luka, and I mean, it's the same team essentially. Like, they got to make some major moves. So everybody's looking over their shoulder in LA.
Look, the one thing that you know about Mark Walter and those guys is they're going to bring in the resources. And Jeannie Buss, and I think it's important for people to notice, is that for a long time, NBA money was the business. Like, you didn't have really outside businesses. You had your wealth, and then you poured your wealth into the team. And in about the last maybe 15 years, maybe since the 2011 CBA, Gary, which led to the landmark TV deal, which was before the bubble and everything else, and then led to this TV deal, if you do a count, and I don't have to do the count like literally in front of you guys, but I believe about 15 teams have changed hands. Since the 2011 lockout. That is right around half, look, I think it's 16. So it's more than half the league has changed hands. So it's no longer the family business of running a basketball team. It is sovereign money, which is like the Wizards. It is the venture capitalist stuff. It is the private equity stuff. Like, it's a different brand of owner with more resources. And because these players, because these teams are worth more, you have to put more up front to handle the cost. And I don't know if the Lakers were always flush with cash in that way, because the Lakers were the family business. Yes. Your profits were going to be what you put into it. So they had some of the, you know, some of the thinnest scouting staffs in the league, even though they were drafting reasonably well recently and finding your Austin Reeves and finding, you know, certain players here or there. Like, they've been able to make, you know, rub two sticks together and make fire. That's fine. But now, especially as LeBron is aging out, and who knows when he's going to retire or if this changes his trajectory, the roster flaws, you can't really say, you're not going to say, well, Mark Walter doesn't have the money to do it. You can say maybe Mark Walter is restricted by the aprons.
Yes.
But with the Dodgers, he put money into it. They put out the best team that money can buy. And now you got to figure out what's going to happen with Luka. Luka can sign a short extension. He can wait. He can sign the extension that takes him to 10 years, and then he can sign the super big extension while acknowledging he lost a whole lot of money by being traded from Dallas to L.A. There's a lot of that. So I'm fascinated, Gary, by especially the fact that Jeannie Buss is going to remain governor for a number of years. Ramona Shelburne, our friend at ESPN, she said that this is in writing, not like the Mark Cuban thing, which was a handshake deal.
And he got pushed Dallas. Out. Yeah.
So, yeah, it in the Buss family, a lot of people that I'll talk to, Gary, like ownership sources that I'll talk to, nobody was surprised because they said that Jeannie was the only one that wanted to keep the team. And when somebody comes to you with $10 billion that is going to be split amongst all that dude's babies, you better take a hard look at that. Last thing before we get to the last word, Gary, somebody else that you know very, very well, Ime Udoka in Houston, got a big extension from ownership there. You know, he took the Rockets to second seed. They lost in seven to Golden State. They're heavy into this Kevin Durant, the Kevin Durant talks. I felt like they could have gotten KD before the deadline for the low. They chose not to. They chose to ride it out with the players that they have. Like, what do you see? How do you see Ime? What's the next step for them? Is it getting a KD, or do you think it is, okay, I'm in Thompson, this is your team?
Yeah, I think just taking that next step with the young core that they have. Now, KD gives them a quality established scorer and a closer. That's what Houston did not have in that Golden State series. And, you know, I love Fred VanVleet, like everybody. You like, you know, the great story, undrafted. But if he's your guy to close out games, that's probably not a championship level team as much as, and now obviously his contract is up, but he's got a player option, a team option for like that $42 million. We'll see how that goes. But to me, Jalen Green just wasn't ready for that. And do you wait till he gets ready? Do you have him? I don't think it's anything wrong with them running it back, right? But you just saw the intangibles. Well, you said that they needed that one vet, that guy that's like, okay, guys, like, and VanVleet did kind of serve that role, but you need an upgrade from that. And I think Udoka has worked well with the young guys, gotten them to play defense. As much as I think we all love Steven Silas, it just didn't work out in terms of his impact on the younger players. Ime comes in, you know, Ime don't, like, everybody asks me, what's it like, what was it like to cover him? I didn't get to know Ime that well. Ime was not a friendly guy. And I'm not talking about he was a mean. Ime was about his business. Now,
he wasn't warm. That's basically what you said. He wasn't warm and
exactly.
Fuzzy.
Now, obviously, he did some things.
And as an aside, Gary, they replaced him with Joe Mazzulla.
Ask my friend, man. I love Joe. That's my guy.
You and Joe are like Tom and Jerry.
there might be a book on that. Anyway, so Ime was about he was no nonsense in terms of his on the court dealing with the players, being hard on them, and I think that's what has translated well in Houston. Like, these young dudes, as much as they look like, damn, man, you old, you ain't got nothing, they want to be, a lot of these guys want to be coached, and they want to be coached hard. And I think what's happened in today's NBA is, like, what what's the, you know, with Mike Malone and with Taylor Jenkins and now Thibodeau, like, how do you reach these young guys? Which dudes on your team want to be coached hard and well, and which ones want you to give them a break? You know, and we're finding that, quite honestly, like, it's hard. And there's going to be good coaches fired because they don't know how to reach. And some of these young dudes don't want to be reached and others do. And so they're, you know, you need to coach me hard. You know, I don't know about him, but me. And so, you know, you got Mikal Bridges complaining about playing time. And then Jalen Brunson saying Tibbs is going to be the coach to bring us to the prosperity. So I think with Ime, I think they knew his impact on the players in Boston. They liked playing for him. And they didn't like, you know, he wasn't their buddy. He wasn't their friend. Ime is not going to be your friend, but he's going to be hard. And I think that that discipline was desperate in Houston after, obviously, Mike D'Antoni, Steven Silas. Like, they needed a disciplinarian. I think that works. And now, let's see,
Does Kevin Durant fit over there? Do you think KD fits with Ime?
I think there'll be a mutual respect there. I think he'll make it work. And, you know, and remember, they have their ties from Brooklyn. Like, Ime was an assistant with the Nets with Kevin Durant. So they know each other. There's a good relationship there. I do think it can work. And I think Kevin is coachable. Kevin just wants to hoop and win and comment on stuff on X. Like, that's what Kevin does, man. Will Kevin be a leader by example? Will he be a vocal leader? I don't know. But you got to think he's going to walk into that locker room and the Jalen Greens and the dudes are like, man, I played with you in 2K, like, are going to be like wide-eyed.
In all of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dudes who were, you know, born in 2002 or whatever, you know, it was like, man, I was in third grade. And, you know, when you was in the finals, are going to be like, you know, in 2012 are going to be like, oh my God, it's Kevin Durant. And my, you know, like, he'll have an impact.
That depends on if he goes there. Who knows where KD is going to go? I'm hoping that there's not a trade today because I just want to be able to sleep before Game 7. But, you know, who knows what the hell is going to happen. But we're going to take our last break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis. It is time for the last word here with Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe. Gary, it looks from reports, it looks to be that Giannis Antetokounmpo will not be traded, at least not before the draft. I'm saying that myself because you never know what could happen. Giannis seems like the type of player, if he was going to get traded, he'd be traded in the den of night to not look like the bad guy. That being said, it looks like he's going to stay. Dame looks to be out for all of next year, or at least a huge chunk of next year, with the Achilles. No more Chris Middleton, you got Kyle Kuzma. Bobby Portis is a free agent. Brook Lopez is a free agent. What are we in store for next season with the Bucks, considering how much money they have tied up in Giannis and Dame, really limiting them to do work in the free agent market and everywhere else? Is this going to be one of those years, if Giannis stays, that Doc Rivers is going to work some magic and overachieve in the regular season and turn this into a 50-win team?
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be because, I mean, I'm just looking at the rosters. Like, Dame gets a $10 million bump up next year from last year. So, like, they don't lose a lot, even though Lopez is a free agent, Porter's the free agent. So is Torian Prince, and so is Gary Trent. Gary Trent was really good for them, except that last few minutes against Indiana.
Yeah.
But he signed for the vet minimum, and he ain't getting the vet minimum this time around. Somebody's going to pay him. So it all depends on if the Bucks have his bird rights, which I'm not sure. But to me, it's going to have to be, you know, Giannis and the Miracles in this situation where he gets a bunch of young guys and they try to draft well, I don't know if they're eligible to sign a trade. Like, Portis has a player option at $13 million. He's probably
going
to
He's going in the free agency.
Yeah, and so does Pat Connaughton, but Connaughton hasn't been good for them the last couple of years. I assume he opts in. So they got salary problems. And I said Kevin Porter Jr. was good for them, but he's also got a player option, and he signed for the vet minimum. And, you know, I think he's hopefully put behind his troubles, so he's going to be a guy's marketable out there. I mean, they've got so even all their young guys. Jericho Sims, the free agent. Like, to me, I don't know what they do. Like, I don't know how you turn this franchise because it's so top heavy. I think we found Kuzma is just not a big money player. Like, everybody thought, right. Oh, they'll just replace a really banged up and over the, you know, maybe on the back nine, Chris Middleton with a young, and Kuzma ain't young no more. He's 30. Kuzma, and maybe he'll, you know, kind of relive his days from the Lakers. And
right.
It just, that did not work. And Dame is going to be out most of the year. It's ugly. It's ugly. And so
the weird thing is if Dame didn't have the injury and they just got knocked down the first round, and you look at where Boston is, and you look at where New York is, and you look at the uncertainty with Cleveland, like, I'm curious if Cleveland's going to make some personnel moves themselves. The Bucks can say, you know what, we can stand pat, operate around the fringes a little bit, have some continuity, and then we can make a last gasp run to the NBA Finals just because the East theory could be wide open.
Yeah.
My theory on Giannis is this. If he eventually wants out, whether it's now or later, the best thing to do is to keep your powder dry in the meantime, because there's no one place that right now has the draft capital and the young players that is a Giannis away, that you don't have to give all that up, that they can absorb Giannis and then still be a ready-made championship team. So the best thing to do is, if you know you eventually want to do that and you want to make sure that the Bucks get something in return and everything else, that you play this year out. And you let a team, whoever it is, you let them figure their books out, go acquire some draft capital, whatever it is, in the quiet of night, and then you make this move this time next year.
Yeah.
Like, I do think there's going to be some movement on draft night. I would not be surprised. We can get into the draft on Monday and everything else, but I'm fascinated. I don't think that this is the forever play. I think this is for the, you know, love the one you with for right now play for Giannis Antetokounmpo. But Gary, my man, I really appreciate you, brother. Thanks for joining me, man. I guess I'll see you at Summer League, right?
Summer League for sure.
Oh, my God, man. Summer League is like 2 weeks away.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not like there's a Game 7 or anything like that. Not like there's nothing else going on between now and Summer League.
Free agency,
oh, my God,
starts,
I'm tired.
Free agency starts July 1st, so.
June 30th.
June 30th, that's right. That's right. Or day earlier.
As someone, as an impending free agent, reminded me the other day, I said, are you looking forward to July 1st? He was like, what's that? I said, oh, June 30th. He pointed at me. He was like, that's the day. Yes. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is Gary Washburn. Don't forget to check his workout at the Boston Globe. We will be back on Monday in the aftermath of Game 7. Hopefully, there's no Game 8 of the NBA Finals. Until then, everybody be safe.